Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, final hour of the program. Happy Friday. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you so much for listening. Filling in for Jim today and Monday. Jim is back Tuesday. As always, the program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Whatever my faults, I don't say things I don't believe. I'll never lie to you. That's why when I told that story about my neighbors bringing my son with water, I was honest about my not-so-great reaction. It's also true, as I said a few hours ago, and I'm about to say now, Howard Beck is one of my favorite people and one of, I think, the best NBA writers, reporters, podcasters in the country, which is why it's awesome to follow him on Twitter at Howard Beck and have him here on the show. Mr. Beck, I hope you're ready because I'm going to throw a hot take to you like you love at the end of this interview.
I mean, if you didn't, I'd be disappointed, Bill. I just want to know, when you're not on your own show, are you still writer than me?
Yes. Yes. 99 out of 100 times, the former show called Writer Than You. Yes, I am. Let's go with it. Let's assume it's accurate.
All right.
I know you love the grammar of that. I know you were a big fan of the name of the show. Writer of
I will just assume for the rest of this conversation that I am wronger than you.
I would never normally do this, but I'm gonna pick a bone with you because, Howard, I follow you on Twitter. I'm on your timeline a lot. You have a new avatar, and I kid you not, I had a nightmare about your whatever that. What is happening on this avatar? Is it a cartoon? What are you doing? It's a stressful time out there.
Are you not aware of the genius that is Game of Zones, the Bleacher Report animated series that is a mashup of Game of Thrones and the NBA?
I am. I can't pretend to have consumed it as much as I should have. Is this your is this you? Dude, you look, I don't know. It's haunting.
It's me, but it's me as a maester, as they would say.
So funny. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, you got to watch Game of Zones. Go on Bleacher Report or go on YouTube. All the episodes are there.
All right.
But this season that just concluded, the final four episodes ever in Game of Zones, featured a lot of media people, including myself, the highest honor I've ever had in my career. Zach Lowe, Brian Windhorst, Stephen A. Smith, there's a bunch of us.
Howard Beck here on the show. All right, so, well, let's start here with the news today, the passing of Jerry Sloan. As you process this, as you heard it today, Howard, what were your where does your mind go as it relates to Jerry Sloan when you heard the news that he had passed?
Well, I mean, appropriately, since we've been immersed in the 90s for the last, 5 weeks of watching The Last Dance, to me, I think of Sloan and I just immediately, of course, think of Stockton and Malone. And as much as when we think about the 90s Bulls, who, of course, won their last two championships against the Jazz, and you always think you cannot think of Michael and Scottie without Phil Jackson, and Stockton and Malone, it should be Stockton, Malone, and Sloan. Like, they're inseparable. And they were one of the great teams of the 90s and of part of the 80s too. They're sustaining their ability to sustain excellence for as long as they did. Playoffs for 20 straight years, including 15 under Jerry Sloan, and the number of seasons that were 62 and 60 win seasons and high 50s. Just this was a team that they were just a machine, and they exuded the ethos of Jerry Sloan. They were tenacious. They were tough. They were physical. They would get into you. Teams hated playing them because they were just always just kind of clutching and grabbing. And it was, it's a physical era, but they were the physical team of that physical era. And, Sloan's personality, which was cultivated during his playing days with the Chicago Bulls, he was a tenacious, tough-minded, rough and tumble player back then. And that's how he channeled all that into his coaching. He had that tough exterior, but a heart of gold beneath it, and really cared about his players. Was very demanding. Certainly, he was a my way or the highway kind of coach, more of that old school kind of coach. But he really had a tender side as well that people who knew him much better than I do would see.
Grandmaster Howard Beck here on the show on Twitter at Howard Beck, Bill Ryder filling in for Jim Rome. Howard, I have a perspective that is probably wildly unpopular, but I want to offer it to you with the appropriate nuance before you tear it apart or agree with it or whatever your perspective is. I was riveted by The Last Dance. Absolutely. And I thought, especially in learning that they had to put that together on the run, having been involved in very, very short, like 5-minute, you know, features on TV, how much work goes into that. I thought it was an amazing accomplishment. I'm a little frustrated with maybe how there hasn't been enough talk about the fact it's not really a documentary in the sense it's an autobiography. So I enjoyed it, but I took a lot of it with a grain of salt, just knowing that Jordan controlled the narrative, which is probably the journalist in me. What was, in the end, what was your overarching reaction or feeling to a 10-part series that really dominated sports for so long because of the vacuum we were operating in?
I mean, there are different kinds of documentaries, and, you know, I'll never forget, you know, whatever it was 6-7 years ago, whenever it was that the Foo Fighters, who a band that I love, put out this documentary about themselves, and Dave Grohl had ultimate control over the whole thing. And the journalist in me thought, you know, there's a more objective story here that Dave Grohl, the leader of this band, would probably not want told. There's some other piece of this that we're missing. But in the end, all I cared about was, this was friggin' awesome. I love the Foo Fighters. I loved watching this documentary for 2 hours, and I love the band and Grohl all that much more. That's kind of like what this was. This was, you know, if you needed a refresher of how great the Chicago Bulls were in the 90s, or if you were too young to have seen them live and you needed an introduction to the history of that team and the characters who made up that team, this did it for you. And if you're someone, you know, of my generation who did live through that era, knew it mostly from a distance because I wasn't covering the NBA for most of it, I still learned some things. And we got all that behind-the-scenes footage that, yes, Michael Jordan had control over when and how that footage was ever going to be released. But we also got these modern-day interviews with Jordan and Pippen and Phil Jackson and Dennis Rodman and all these folks that gave us a distanced analysis looking back and telling us some of the backstories and how they felt. And so if people want to quibble with, as you have, some of the aspects of the limitations that this may have had on it, or places that you wished it could have gone, that's fine. I don't dismiss any of that. Everyone's going to consume it or enjoy it their own way. I just think that if the goal was to give us new insight, both from the modern-day perspective with new interviews and with the old behind-the-scenes footage that had never before seen, it delivered on all counts, and it was incredibly entertaining. It was incredibly well done. And, yeah, look, there's always more that you could ask for and that you might want. I think people who are calling it hagiography or saying that this was just brand management for Jordan, I think are taking it way too far. I think that the director, Jason Hare, did a really good job of tackling some of the tough issues when it came to Michael Jordan's being, you know, politically agnostic, or whether it was his gambling. Like, they hit the main points. And any of those you could have gone for an hour on each and done it differently, and if you were doing an objective piece from a distance without Jordan's participation, it might go in a different direction. But you wouldn't have Michael Jordan and all the things that he brought to this documentary, and his voice was critical.
Well said. Howard Beck here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in. All right, Howard, so I'm going to ask you about sort of your expectations for this NBA season, and I understand, you know, I think we all understand these things can change moment to moment, minute to minute. But with everything you know now, what is your confidence level, not just that we're going to have a season, sounds like we're going to have a season, but that we're going to have and complete a full postseason and crown a champion in a best-of-seven series?
All signs seem to be pointing toward this happening. There's momentum going in that direction. As cities and states are slowly reopening, you know, it is kind of, you know, creating the room for this to happen, and the NBA certainly wants it to happen. There's a lot of money at stake, not to mention just the integrity of completing a season. But my message to everybody would be this: as we talk here on May 22nd, with a presumed goal of maybe June, sometime in June teams practicing, and sometime in mid to late July teams playing again, a lot can happen. This thing is ever evolving. There's a lot about this virus we still don't know, that scientists are still learning. And I just don't think we should make any hard and fast assumptions. And I think the NBA would say that themselves too. You know, they're going to plan for this. They're going to hope to resume. I don't know exactly what that'll look like. There's talk of a handful of regular season games before the playoffs. I think they would probably prefer to still go best of seven series. I think a strong case could be made to shorten it up and get this thing moving and done more quickly so as to not overly impact next season, and also to not require people to be isolated from their families or, you know, in a neutral city for as long as you know, any longer than necessary. But the NBA, you know, the more games that they can play on TV, the more money they stand to recoup, and they're taking losses regardless. So surely they're going to try to pack in as many games as they can.
Howard Beck, let's err on the side of optimism for these next couple of questions and just presume that things go relatively smoothly, that there are some regular season games and we have a postseason, right? That there is not a great debacle or recurrence and they're able to get back to the season and complete it. Of the three teams that I would label as the real contenders, and by all means, correct me, add, subtract, the Clippers, Lakers, Bucks, who has the biggest advantage and or disadvantage in this long hiatus, do you think, of those teams?
Oh, it's really hard to say, Bill. I mean, it's a good question, but it's one where I just don't think there's a great answer to it. I mean, you could start with the fact that Giannis had a knee injury when the season suspended, and so he's now had all these months to rehab his knee. And so that's a huge benefit to the Bucks that he didn't have to either try to drag it through the end of the regular season with potentially re-injuring it and whatever. But, you know, the Lakers rise and fall on LeBron, and, you know, he's 35 and in his, you know, whatever, 16th season. 17th season? I've lost track. We've been off too long.
No, I don't even know what day of the week it is, so no judgment here.
And exactly. So, does it take longer for an older guy to get moving again? I don't know. Is this going to benefit the younger players more? Maybe. I just don't know that there's any real, you know, concrete defensible answer there. I do think that for all teams, their training staffs, their medical staffs are going to be on high alert because nobody's going to be in basketball shape when they come back, and they're going to have to get ready within a few weeks. And I think that is a huge concern here too, that, you know, the virus is one health concern, but the other one is guys playing before they're really ready to, or playing too many minutes because they've been off for so long and then going out and blowing out a knee.
Howard Beck here on the show. Howard, if this, and I know we don't know, but if this were to permanently shift the NBA calendar where down the line, the season begins, let's say on Christmas Day, and the finals happen in August or whatever, that sort of range of a calendar, do you like that? Is that good for the game? Is it bad for the game?
You know, I don't know that it's really going to happen. I mean, it's been discussed, and we'll see if they ultimately have to as a result of this delay. But to permanently change the calendar, where you start in mid to late December and you end sometime in the middle of summer, July or August, that requires a sign-off of the players. That is a collectively bargained issue. And so you can't do it unless the Players Association signs off on it and is in on it. And I would just say that there are a lot of players who have young families with children who are out of school in the summer, and having the NBA calendar and the academic calendar line up is very beneficial to those players and their families because it means that they get that time with their kids and can go on vacation in the summer, and that's what they're all used to. And so while there may be some advantages to starting in December for the NBA because, hey, look, now you're not going head-to-head with the NFL and college football for as long a period of time, and you get the summer to yourself. It's just basketball and baseball, and who watches baseball anymore anyway? So there are some advantages in just in terms of you know, the TV schedule and exposure and getting as much fan attention as possible, but the downside potentially would be you lose your summer. And I don't know if players will go for that or not, and we'll see if it's necessary for this coming season or not, for the 2020-21 season. It really just depends on when they can get this season wrapped up.
And you and I are both fathers, so we can relate to that. And I think our next guest, Rob Dibble, still watches baseball, so he probably does.
Glad I'm not in the same room with Rob Dibble right now.
He's actually a great guy. Howard Beck on the show.
My head.
Howard, has anyone ever called you Howard Hot Take Beck just because you hate hot takes so much? I want that to be what we refer to you when you come on. But I want you to keep coming on when I fill in. So I guess probably can't do it, right? That probably wouldn't play well. Are you ready for my hot take? I don't think it's a hot take. It would just be accused of it. I hate that term. Are you ready for
all right,
my
hit me?
I'm gonna just do a little historical pat myself on the back, okay? Just to kind of, you know, try to lift this up a little bit. I said the same thing 4 or 5 years ago about the Clippers versus the Lakers and got destroyed for it here in LA. I am such a doubter of Kyrie plus Kevin Durant equaling, oh, we won an NBA championship. I believe the Knicks have just as good a chance of making a finals before the Brooklyn Nets. Go. I do.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I got an oh, wow. Love it.
Listen, I understand exactly what you're saying when you express doubts about Kyrie and KD together. I think there is a very legitimate and understandable and rational case to be made that those two personalities ultimately may have some difficulty with each other. Who knows? And besides that, we still have to see Kevin Durant getting back to being Kevin Durant after an Achilles, which, as we know, is a very tough injury. So I understand all of that, Bill. But you're making a massive, massive leap when you go to the extreme of saying that the Knicks could make the finals before the Nets, when the Knicks have like 1.5 players on their roster of any importance. And even then, we don't really know what R.J. Barrett's going to become. And Mitchell Robinson, he may have already hit his ceiling. It certainly has looked that way at times. So the Knicks are so far from even moderate respectability that I can't even entertain comparing them to almost any franchise in terms of a timeline to get back to the finals.
You're not wrong, but I'll just say you could have taken your words and, you know, substituted the Lakers 5 years ago here in L.A., and that did not play well in local L.A. radio, or 6 years ago, whenever it was. Howard Beck, you are awesome. We appreciate you. I hope you and the family are healthy and hanging in there in beautiful Brooklyn. We miss the city, and as always, man, very cool and gracious of you to make some time.
No, always fun, Bill. Appreciate it. All the best to you and your family.
Thanks, buddy. Be good. Howard Beck on the show on Twitter at Howard Beck, Bleacher Report, NBA guru. He's awesome. And I can tell you with no doubt, a man that still watches baseball is Rob Dibble. He's going to join me next here on the Jim Rome Show.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Jim Rome Show, Bill Ryder with you, filling in for Jim. Want to be prepared for Memorial Day? Pepto-Bismol has you covered. Try new Pepto-Bismol Chews. They're a great tasting way to get the same fast relief you know and love from Pepto-Bismol, so you can enjoy all that grilling worry-free, use as directed, and keep out of reach from children. Phone number here, 1-800-636-8686. I'm on Twitter, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. This guy's off. This is, I had the pleasure of working with this gentleman on radio when I started in the radio business. One of the nicest guys you could hope to meet. Gracious enough to make some time right now. The great Rob Dibble. Dibs, I hope you and the family are doing good, buddy. Healthy, happy, sane.
Everybody's doing great. My daughter's doing her slip and slide right now in the backyard after some tennis lessons. So everybody's good.
Ooh, is your daughter a good tennis player? Because, I mean, she's got the genes, obviously.
She's doing really well. For 9, she hits the crap out of the ball. Everybody keeps saying, well, why don't you play softball or baseball? I'm like, let's just stick to tennis. Maybe golf, but I'm going to keep her away from the bigger balls.
Dude, that's smart. I got to tell you, Dibs, and this is embarrassing, and I'm going to say it on the Jim Rome Show, but I have become I was a good tennis player in my youth, become very good again, have a pretty high rating in a pretty competitive league. And the last time I played before the whole world got shut down, I got crushed by a 10-year-old. It was such a humbling experience.
Don't feel bad. She beat me 4-1 today.
So
I'm 56, and I got crushed.
That actually does make me feel better. Rob Dibble here on the show. Dibs, we saw the protocols and the initial proposal from Major League Baseball to games returning. They're very particular. They're very specific. There's a lot of details. What is your reaction to where we're at in terms of what we think baseball will look like when it comes back?
I think it'll be very close to normal. I think at lower levels, and I coach at the lower levels, especially Little League with travel teams, you have to separate them and keep the social distancing. I think the big leaguers, they're going to get a lot of testing. They know they need to disinfect the heck out of each other and wash their hands and throw baseballs away and all that kind of stuff. The one thing that concerns me is you've got a huge language barrier. It's not like all the other sports, but you've got, you know, Venezuelans, Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, Mexicans. You've got all these different languages, Korean, Japanese, and you know, you have a 67-page report. You didn't need 67 pages. I think that the point was gotten across. I think a lot of the guys are a little bit upset that, you know, you can't use the facilities. I totally agree with them. The one thing Major League Baseball can control is washing showers, limiting like four guys to a 10-shower bay, that kind of stuff. Okay, so you can't use the whirlpools and stuff like that. Well, why can't you, you know, be in the training room every other table, which are already like 6 feet apart? So there's a lot of stuff that's in there that I think that Major League Baseball is protecting itself, maybe liability-wise, but I think the majority of the players, if not 99.9%, would sign off at the risk factor to get back on the field. Korea's doing it great. Taiwan's doing it great. So I think, you know, baseball will look normal, except it won't have any fans.
Rob Dibble here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in. Dibs on Twitter at Rob Dibble and the number 49. Rob, obviously, to win a World Series, you want to be, you know, strong in a lot of areas. But in what's going to be a very shortened season, is there going to be an advantage in being a team that's a little more veteran-heavy or a little more youth-oriented? Maybe starting pitching's a strength or offense is a strength or bullpen strength. Is there anything that's going to become more valuable in trying to pursue a World Series championship over the course of a much, much shorter season?
Oh, Bill, I mean, if you expand the roster, it's just four guys that you're meeting, you know, 13 pitchers. You've got extra guys on the bench. You know, you could definitely, you know, use pinch hitting to a different level. You're going to have the DH in both leagues, and there's not going to really be leagues because you're going to have the 10-10-10, which I like, because you're going to see some great matchups that you normally wouldn't see unless it was an interleague scheduling thing. So for me, I think that the pitching should be fine. You've got guys that can come in a lot earlier. You're gonna have guys that are going to be a lot fresher because the season is shorter. And I think you're going to see some high-scoring games because I think the defense is probably going to be a little bit askew to start. You know, they're going to have a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks tops to get ready, which means that, you know, once they start playing, they have to play with a sense of urgency. And Paul DeJong hit it right. He's like, if you go into a five-game losing streak, you might be out of the playoffs. So, you know, that sense of urgency makes it better. Remember when the NBA played the 66-game season? I loved it.
Yeah.
Because they were really busting it every game because they knew a couple of losses here and we're out of the playoff picture. So I think you'll see some really good baseball.
I mean, to your point, the Spurs, a team that normally don't put their foot on the throttle, I think won 50 or 51 games that year out of those 66 games. Rob Dibble here on the program. Dibs, obviously, Major League Baseball, all the sports, they're going to do what they need to do to keep people safe and to make it possible to get back to action. And that's probably going to include no fans in ballparks or stadiums or very few. As a guy that performed at a high level that won a World Series, does that have an impact? Like, is it going to change performance for some guys if they're in an empty, huge ballpark?
I think it does to begin, but I think after a few games or a week, you realize, listen, I got to be professional, and I've got to get myself motivated almost as much as I would if there were 40, 50,000 people there. You know, a lot of people are watching this because they're still locked up. They can't really do a whole lot. So they're going to be glued to the TV set. So you have to imagine that they're there. I mean, I've already discussed this on my own show, is pipe in music and pipe in crowd noise. You know, don't have it be like a funeral. You have to have some kind of noise because most guys are used to that, you know, whether it's spring training or the season. So, you know, and I've watched a lot of Korean baseball. They have a few cheerleaders. They've got some robot fans and stuff like that. Major League Baseball could easily do some stuff like that. And here's how you market it. Instead of being at the game, you know, you set up cameras with these mannequins and these robots and stuff, and you could pay to be seated right by the dugout or something. And maybe you can even have speakers built into these robots. I mean, use your imagination, make it fun. It's never going to happen again, hopefully, in our lifetime. But if it does, you're prepared for it because you did it this time. But the players, you got to be professional, man. Go out there. You can't think about what you can't control. And that's, if there's no fans, you can't control that.
Dibs, I'm a Cubs fan, which means that I am incentivized for major markets to have an advantage. But as a fan of the sport, I always look forward to some surprise team or small market team making a run and being serious. And you said it, you lose five games in a row, you could be out of the playoffs. You get hot and win eight games in a row, you could put yourself right in the mix. In this shortened season, any teams that aren't the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers or the Cubs that you think people should be keeping their eye on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, listen, the Tampa Bay Rays have great pitching. I think the Twins have done a marvelous job the last couple of years. A lot of these teams, even the Reds, I love the Reds starting rotation. Really, really, it's attrition again. Whoever can stay the healthiest, because this is a sprint. This is no longer a marathon. And the back end of the bullpen is going to be huge. I think that's still a huge advantage for the Yankees, the Dodgers, Astros, of course. They still have a lot of talent. So teams like that have fresh arms and guys that can really, even if you give them extra days off because you have extra bodies, I think that's a huge advantage. I don't know if it matters if you're veterans or not. I mean, I love the Braves. They have a great young team. The Phillies have a lot of great young players, and they want to win bad. So I think it should be a great season as long as they figure this out and get back there and start practicing and getting towards that common goal of playing baseball.
All right, Dibs, I'm gonna end on a random question. You ready? I'm hoping no one's ever asked you this in a radio interview. We'll see if I can accomplish the goal of giving you a question you've never been asked. You were an amazing pitcher. You were the NLCS MVP for that Reds team that won the World Series. And you came out of the bullpens. You didn't hit a lot. When's the last time you hit a home run in an actual competitive baseball game?
It had to be in the early 80s. The last time I hit a baseball home run, I hit a lot of softball home runs.
Doesn't count.
My career was over. But baseball-wise, it had to be Legion of 1982.
So never hitting the minors. They never were like, Dibs, you're a huge dude. Get out there.
Nope.
Rookie ball, whatever. How long were you in the minors
for? Once they made me a full-time pitcher, I started for a couple years. Yep. Then they put me in the bullpen. But we DH'd in the minor leagues. They didn't even let the pitchers hit back then.
Of course. Did you like the minors? I mean, was that – you look back at that, did you enjoy the experience? I mean, obviously you got to the show, which I'm sure changes the perspective compared to a guy that only got to AA. But how do you look back at your minor league time?
Oh, I loved it. It was 4.5 years. I went to Puerto Rico 3 times to play in the winter. I wouldn't trade it at all. It was amazing. I mean, I wish it was a little shorter. I wish it was 3 years. But, no, I loved it. I got to see the country. I got to see other countries and made lifelong friends by playing in Puerto Rico in the winter. That was probably what got me to the major leagues, meeting Ed Figueroa, who helped me with my breaking stuff. And my confidence, and Sandy Alomar Sr. and all the guys that I play with. I wouldn't have made it to the major leagues had I not gone through the minor leagues or Puerto Rico in the winter.
That's one of the many things I love about baseball, such a different path. Rob Dibble, you're a good man, buddy. Really appreciate you making time here on the program. Hope you and the family are well, and don't go easy on your 9-year-old. Us old guys got to beat the kids in tennis from time to time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And keep up the good work. Maybe you and I can play tennis against each other.
Dude, whenever the world opens up and I come out east, I will drive up to Connecticut just to play tennis. That's the one place I don't think I'll embarrass myself athletically with you.
All right. Sounds great.
All right, buddy. Thanks, dude. Yeah. Rob Dibble on the show. I love Dibs. There's a lot of things about baseball that I find fascinating. But the road is so – can you imagine the quarterback of some future Super Bowl or – the finals MVP, like, oh, yeah, I spent 4 years. I guess Kurt Warner is the only place you can point to doing a little Iowa time in some random league. But baseball, man, such a different deal. And love Howard Beck, but Dib watches baseball, and so do I. Bill Ryder filling in here on the Jim Rome Show. I can't believe the show's almost over. It's crazy. We're going to hit some tweets, and James Kelly, Garrett Ritt, we're going to get him in the poker game, and James Kelly is going to help us all figure out how to make some money on that universal gambling attraction, table tennis. All that and more to close out the Jim Rome Show after we get a CBS Sports Radio update. Cannot believe how quickly this show has flown by. Bill Ryder with you, filling in for Jim here on the Jim Rome Show. Thank you to Jim and the guys for making it easy. So much fun. This is always the highlight of my week or month, but especially since I've been in Zoom hell the last 2 months, it's even sweeter. Thank you to Garrett Ritt, James Kelly here in Los Angeles. Those guys are awesome. We'll hear from them here in just a second. Thank you to Tom DeCelestino working in New York City, who just sent me a text that said, refer to me as the man, capital T, capital M. No. And thank you to Tom DiBenedetto also helping out back in New York City. Appreciate those guys. It is time to answer your Ask the Pros questions. Were you the clones? Get to submit a question at cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Question is from Dave in the Lou, where I lived for a summer. I went to the University of Missouri, spent some time there. It's a good question. I'm going to give you an honest answer to it. Which athlete or celebrity, current or former, would you not tell Henry to stop yelling at? Easy. Chris Paul. Yell away. Don't like phonies, don't like bullies. He was both in my experience. I've told those stories many times. In fact, I think we had a tweet earlier at Sports Writer, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R, to that exact same point. Yeah, Mailman Casey tweeted, probably a good thing Chris Paul isn't your neighbor. Yeah, probably a really good thing, CP3. Yeah, sure he's a good dad, sure he's a good guy, sure he's fun to have beers with. He is not a pleasant person to interact with if you cover a team, or as I understand it from my reporting, if you play on a team with him. Chris Paul, the most talented guy of our generation, who's probably not going to win a ring. And that is a damn shame. If you want to give us a call, 1-800-636-8686. Again, RomeAndHaveATake.com. Jim on Twitter, at Jim Rome. I'm on there at Sports Writer, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. So I told the story earlier about Henry, my son. Neighbor wouldn't leave the yard, became a bit of a thing. Henry started referring to people by this guy's name. We'll call him John Doe. You're a John Doe. And one day started yelling at a man for no reason. That man who was walking by was Steve Nash. And I told this right how I see him everywhere. I mean everywhere. Like Burbank, New York, Chicago. And I'm terrified of the idea of space. Like you could not, $50 million, I'm not getting in a rocket ship and going up into space. But if you could, and I went to Mars and I was supposed to be the only person there, I'm telling you Steve Nash would be on the other side. Like everywhere I go, the dude is there. And I love this from Lil Womp Womp. Good for your son. Steve Nash did the... Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one. Although, I'm not going to... Steve Nash did the Lakers so dirty he deserves much worse. Come on, man. That's not nice. And that was a Dwight Howard problem. You don't blame the thing that gets burned. You blame the thing that tortures to the ground. Better have my donuts. That sounds a lot like my children on Saturday morning. Like, hey, guys, daddy's trying to sleep. Better have my donuts, tweets a sports writer. Steve Nash is your Lee Trevino from Happy Gilmore. Well done. Well done.
Train, planes, and automobiles. Better have my donuts.
When's the last time either of you guys had a donut, by the way? You had a donut last night? Was it gross? It was a great... What does the kid put on the self-creating donut? That sounds like too. I got a sweet tooth all day. I mean, I've transitioned from pure whiskey to mint juleps because coronavirus at night. But that's a lot of sugar. All right, here's what we're gonna do. Garrett, we got to get you in this poker game. What is your availability in the evenings, and what is your sort of financial limit in terms of a friendly game? All right, we're gonna hook you up. And here's the deal: if I win against you in one of these things, next time I come on, I'm going to talk a lot of smack to you. But if you win, we can do it in reverse. All right, Garrett's not on the air. James Kelly, can you give me some table tennis? Can you give me some table tennis insight?
I got some lines for you right now. I'm in the process of making some bets.
Here's one I've never understood. I do some sports gambling. I'm pretty good at it with the NBA. I'm really good at the NFL, and I'm terrible at it with Major League Baseball. But I at least feel like I know what I'm looking at. How does one scout a table tennis? You're looking for form, top spin? Like, what's the world rankings?
Yeah, rankings. It's actually hard. Jim and I talked about it for a while.
You did.
And you have to go to... Half of them are websites that you can't even understand the, you know, language that they're speaking.
You do not speak, for example, Mandarin.
Correct.
Got it.
Yes. So, I got to go through the stats. It's harder than usual, but... we find something. And I've had actually better luck than that than the weather. So I'm sticking with table tennis.
Are you up or down in your table tennis gambling?
What's that?
Are you up or down in your table tennis gambling?
Up on that, down on weather, about even on the others.
Do you know what I found? And I covered it for six brief months. I'm far from an expert in the sport. I'm a fan and not an expert. But I have gone to a lot of UFC fights for CBS Sports in my day. And I've always made money. Like, I have always, and I'm not betting a lot, right? I'll bet $50 to $200 on a fight in Vegas. And I, back in the day, before I was doing radio as much, even then, I was going to 3 to 10 fights a year.
Okay.
For work. I it's pure luck. Like, I can't pretend to, like, the McGregor-Diaz fight.
So you're not deep into it. That's not your thing?
No. I mean, like, enough that, like, I know the main guys. Like, back in the day, like, the McGregor-Diaz fights, I made fairly significant bets on each of those fights and got each of them right. And this is what people always say when they lie about gambling, but this is true. When Rousey lost that fight, I was supposed to have a buddy of mine put $200 down on her opponent. It was like 10 to 1 to 50, whatever
on
it was.
On the Holly Holm one?
Yeah.
The first one?
Yeah. And he didn't get the bet in. Like, he thought I was putting the bet in. I thought he was putting the bet in.
Because you would have had great odds on that, too.
Oh, my God. I don't remember. It was a lot. And we were going to, you know, you're in Vegas. You if you intend to bet 20, you bet 200, right? So it was a big, big bet. But UFC, you should. Are you a fan?
I'm a big fan of the UFC. I actually hit on Justin Gaethje last week over Tony Ferguson. I got good odds.
But what'd that pay? Like 3-1?
I think it was 150, plus 150.
Yeah, plus 150. Dude, UFC, I don't watch it enough now, but if you consume it, it feels like you have a huge edge over people out there. Huge fan.
Ritt just said it was plus 700 for the Holly Holm Rousey fight.
I knew it was.
That's crazy.
You know what? Like, whatever. I'm going to tell the story. I mean, my boss would probably listen, but when you work, when you travel for work, you get a little downtime.
Uh-huh.
And I used my downtime to go to the poker tables, right? Like, I went to the poker table, and so I didn't get the bet in. So I texted my buddy, because I had to run, like, right to the pregame stuff. I texted my buddy, hey, I think this is going to happen. Get the bet in. And apparently he read it as, I got the bet in. So we were both going crazy, right? Like, we're both like, we did it!
And then you realize you didn't have
a ticket. It was the worst beat. We do, we're so smart. And, you know, media guy, you can't cheer. And the UFC treats media guys really, really well. And back in my FoxSports.com days, before, when you could do this, I went and, like, spent 4 or 5 days with Dana White, who knows, a big, you know, friend of the show here.
Right.
And, like, got to party with him a little bit and went up on the stage for a weigh-in where two guys got into it. Like, real access. And so I know him a little bit, and the UFC takes, so I'm like front row, and my muscles are twitching because I'm trying not to cheer about the thousands and thousands of dollars that I've won, right? Just like, we did, I think we were going to put $500 down each or something stupid.
Oh, dude.
Oh, it's a
Why did you think that was the time she was going to lose? You just had some.
Yeah, I mean, it was, well, here's the other thing. Like, I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it, but, like, I was also going to parlay it with some other fight I got right. I just felt like, you know, I wouldn't pretend it's my expertise. I knew a bunch of UFC guys that I would talk to and guys that covered it, and people were starting to make the case that she had created, like, she had dominated a division, and really a sport, women's UFC, where she was it, but that people were now coming up the pipeline, and she was going to hit somebody who was better than she'd expected. She basically created her own Frankenstein.
Yep.
And just like Holly was one of those fighters who could get lucky. And at the time, people thought she had a bunch of upside. I know she lost that. I think she lost her belt the next fight.
Yeah, she lost to Tate the next fight.
It went too soon. That's right. It was like four in a row, right, where it changed.
And then Amanda got it, and she hasn't looked back on the whole thing. But Rousey started falling in love with her, something she wasn't great at, in her hands, instead of, you know, taking them down.
And again, I'm not an expert, but I'm a fan. Some of the people that covered it were talking about, and I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy that trained her, to your exact point, trying to be smarter than her skill set, right?
100%.
Outthinking the sport. Like, no, you've got this thing that works. Be that thing.
Yep.
You know?
And that's what makes Justin Gaethje so incredible right now. He's actually a wrestler, and he's beating everybody with his hands. But Rousey did the same thing, and Holm gave it to her.
Was that 4 years ago? Whenever it was, it's been a minute. But I think Holm got her at the end. Like, it was sort of close, wasn't it? Didn't she submit her at the
end? It was somewhat close, but she was kind of dominated on the stand-up. And it's like, dude, you should understand right now, you have to do something besides stand with this girl, and then boom, you're out.
The only real UFC betting fights where I've lost some money, and it's been really frustrating, has been betting on Cormier. A, because I thought he would win those fights, and two, because I like DC.
Love him.
Obviously, in a couple of those cases, he lost, but he didn't, right? Like one of those.
Absolutely.
The guy he's playing is jacked up on something that he's competing against. DC's a great guy, too, and that colors me sometimes. Like, I shouldn't. You got to bet on the winner, not like that guy's a nice guy behind the scenes.
Yeah, but with DC, I feel you, because he had actually all the skills for all those things, too. And yeah. He was the one person that could maybe possibly beat John Jones when it lined up. And actually, before Jones did get him,
yeah.
He was winning.
Dude, there was a fight, and there was a John Jones fight where DC was he wasn't the better fighter, but he was going to win that fight until just
Oh, it was
Jones
the second one. He was winning it,
yeah. Caught him with the knee?
Yeah, and finished him.
I mean, Jones is the most talented. You could argue.
Kicked him up high and then got him. But, dude, DC was winning that fight.
I had money on that fight, too. I had money on that fight. All right, that's a show. I'm Bill Ryder, filling in for Jim Rome. I'm back on Monday on CBS Sports Radio. Appreciate you listening. As always, it's an honor to do this. It really is. I love this show. Listen to this show when I started doing radio and before radio. And to be sitting in this chair is extremely cool, and I consider CBS Sports Radio family. So this has been a really great day. Looking forward to doing it again on Monday. Garrett Ritt will be back. James Kelly will be gambling on table tennis or something else. Be me, be Garrett, be Alvin DeLauro. Looking forward to that show. Have a great weekend. We'll have some great guests lined up for you. Going to expand, and I mean this. I said this to Howard Beck, why the Knicks are as likely to make a finals next as compared to the Brooklyn Nets. And several other things. Happy Memorial Day. Have a safe and great weekend. I'm Bill Ryder, and we'll see you again here on Monday on the Jim Rome Show.